live in a parallel universe in which plants underwater their humans and never dust the undersides of their feet, it's the Mike Novak Show, the place where intelligent conversations about the environment, gardening, green living, and healthy lifestyles come to die. Hey, who wrote this? Everybody sing.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
Well, 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 well. Here we are again on the Mike Novak Show, and what does that say about you? Heck, what does it say about me? Anyway, you can hear all of this on the Green Divas Global Digital Network at gdgdradio.com, as well as iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and the GLN Radio Network, or even at mikenowak.net, MikeNowak.net. But the Mike Novak Show is also on Facebook. Just look for the Mike Novak Show. And on Twitter, you can find me with the handle at Mike Now, N-O-W. No, I wasn't being fancy. Somebody already had at Mike Novak. I'm like, come on, you're kidding me, right? Who wants that name? We start today with a visit to an organization that is located not too far from where I live in the city of Chicago. It's called the Rebuilding Exchange. Let's give them a ding. All right, the Rebuilding Exchange, and I really like what they're all about. As they say on their website, which is rebuildingexchange.org, no surprises there, their mission is to create a market for reclaimed building materials. They do this by diverting materials from landfills, yay, and making them accessible for reuse through their retail warehouse, by promoting sustainable deconstruction practices, by providing education and job training programs, and by creating innovative models for sustainable reuse. Hey, you had me at rebuildingexchange.org. So I trundled over to the place at 1740 West Webster Avenue in Chicago to talk to Executive Director Kelly Farley and Senior Director Bryant with a T, Bryant Williams, not that other guy you know about. And I talked to them not just about their ongoing good practices, but about an event they have coming up on Friday, August 28th, the Madison and Wabash Bash. And when you hear what that's about, I think you're going to want to show up. Not at Madison and Wabash, that's just the name of the event, but at 1740 West Webster, that's the address you want to keep in your head. After that segment, I follow up on a show I did more than 2 years ago when I was at Progresso Radio. It's the story of a strawberry that the legendary James Beard once pronounced as the best tasting berry ever. You think I'm making this up, don't you? Well, I'm not. It's called the Marshall Strawberry. And if you heard my program last week with University of Florida researcher Dr. Harry Klee, you know what happens when a perfectly good food plant falls prey to the whims of big agriculture. If you didn't hear that story about how Dr. Klee has produced the garden gem, which might be called the perfect tomato, but how he can't get supermarkets to stock it, you need to go to mikenowak.net/podcasts or to one of the platforms I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, gdgdradio.com, etc., etc., and listen to that darn show. Anyway, the story of the Marshall strawberry is remarkably and distressingly similar to the story of the garden gem tomato, except that there's an artist named Leah Gauthier who decided that she was going to almost single-handedly save the Marshall strawberry. I think that if she had known at the time that it was going to be almost single-handedly, she might not have taken on the challenge, but that's the way life works, eh? By the way, you can find out a lot more information about the Marshall Strawberry at marshallstrawberry.com. Again, no surprises, including how to get your hands on this little baby and grow it in your own backyard, which I have done and which I will talk about on the show. And I'm propagating my own Marshall Strawberry plants. Who knows who I'll give them to? Actually, I have big plans for those, and you will hear about that during the show as well. So sit back, grab a cup of Joe, and dream dreams about reusing your living room molding and creating Marshall Strawberry Shortcake. Not necessarily at the same time. It's all coming up on the Mike Novak Show. And that starts right after this.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynock of Ningladour.
Captain, shields are failing.
Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
Are you feeling the heat? You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment, even in the heat of summer, using an organic slow-release formula like Milorganite feeds your lawn for up to 12 weeks. You can apply less fertilizer and still enjoy fantastic and long-lasting results by following the application rates found at Milorganite.com. Milorganite also adds organic material to the soil and helps conserve water, especially helpful in areas with water restrictions. Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com to find a garden center near you.
I'm gonna go to the supermarket. I'm gonna go to the liquor store. I'm gonna get me some cardboard boxes, you know what them boxes are for. I'm gonna rent me a U-Haul trailer, hook it on the back of my old car. Call up some of my stronger buddies, that's what your strong buddies are for. We're gonna move, we're gonna move, yeah, move.
Here we are sitting at a table. Now, is this table rebuilt?
This is made by RX Made. That's our furniture line. So we have a four-person team that works on these things. They use materials from the warehouse and build everything you see around us. A lot of reclaimed wood tables and cabinets and bottle openers and all sorts of things.
And that person is Kelly Farley, who's the executive director of the Rebuilding Exchange in Chicago. For those of you who live in the Chicago area, 1740 West Webster in the city, in the area of Webster and Elston and that industrial part of the city. I'm also sitting with Bryant Williams, who's the senior director. And it's literally a warehouse. This building has some history too, doesn't it?
It does. I actually don't know the full history of the building. It's been around for a very long time right here on the north branch of the Chicago River.
It kind of fits into the mission. We're taking an older facility and reusing it as well. So,
well, and that's the point. It's got the old skylights. It's wooden beams. Let's talk about the mission a little bit of the Rebuilding Exchange. You've only been around since, what, 2009, right?
That's right.
But I look around, and you got a little bit of everything here. What is the point of this? Obviously, you don't want stuff to go to the landfill. I mean, that's sort of the overarching mission. How do you make that work?
Well, I think, you know, we're a nonprofit whose mission really is to build an economy around waste that we divert from the landfill. So the reuse economy, reclaiming materials, processing those materials can create, by some accounts, seven more jobs than traditional waste management would do. So you have more people handling the woods, processing it, turning it into new products like the table we spoke about, as well as you have avenues for contractors, landlords, apartment dwellers, a little bit of everybody to find something at an affordable price to do some new things to their home.
You're also gaining that that value of not creating additional waste materials from the manufacturing virgin materials. You know, so when you're reclaiming materials, you're reusing materials, you don't have to introduce new materials into the waste stream for production. So that's one of the goals here as well, is to reduce. We're reducing waste in two ways, at the start of the process, but then also at the end of the process.
I'm going to skip a few steps here, but something, you just triggered something in my mind, which is there's a perception that the materials we used to use were better than the ones we use now. Do you find that when you get materials in here that the quality is better than?
Beyond the shadow of a doubt, it is. I mean, you know, having worked in building systems for quite a few years now, you know, we've developed a saying that homes nowadays are engineered to last the life of a mortgage. Back in the day, things were built to last as opposed to being engineered. You know, and you look at particle board or press board, et cetera, et cetera. These are much lower quality materials than what we had before. Plaster versus gypsum, old growth lumber versus new century lumber versus press board versus, you know, mesh lumber and amalgamated wood and things of that nature. So yeah, these are by far much higher quality materials. Even the way that bricks are made nowadays. So your Chicago Common brick is a much stronger brick, and it has a much higher value than bricks that are made nowadays. They're much sturdier, they're much stronger, and they last longer. So you have people that are looking specifically for Chicago Common bricks, and we find them all the time in the Chicago area, you know?
Yeah, I would add too, one of the neat things that I learned when I first started learning about reclaimed lumber and old growth lumber is when you look at the rings in the wood and you can see the old growth lumber, the rings are so much closer together and they create this density and hardness that makes a much more resilient wood, which is why it's still here.
But that's also the problem. You mentioned old growth, Brian, and I say this all the time, and I'm probably boring people with it. I say, but if I become king tomorrow, all the old growth logging stops, you know, right away, because we've cut down too much of that stuff. Part of your job is to prevent the old growth from being cut at all anymore, I would guess.
Yeah, I think when you look at, especially here in the Great Lakes region, you look at cities like Chicago and Detroit and Gary, Indiana, there's almost an urban forest already in the homes that are you know, sitting abandoned, vacant.
Now that's an interesting concept, an old growth forest. It's simply, you're talking about the wood that's in the homes that are sitting around empty. Yes.
Exactly. So the existing homes that are sitting vacant are a natural source of supply without needing to cut down alive trees of, you know, old growth forests.
So how do you get access to this? I know, Bryant, you have a history with Cook County, right? What was that?
Yeah, I worked for Cook County as the manager of engineering services for about 3.5 years, where I oversaw the asbestos abatement program, the asbestos regulatory program, and the demolition debris diversion program. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I know about that because I was involved through Chicago Recycling Coalition, and we endorsed it for you guys and helped get that thing through, which is really important.
Thank you very much. The checks.
No, it's okay. It's all free. It's all great.
No, this is very important. And, you know, and I greatly appreciate the CRC for recognizing the importance of that ordinance. It was one of the, you know, I'm extremely proud of it. It's one of the most progressive thinking ordinances in the Midwest, in that not only did it require, not only did it require 70% diversion of building materials from the waste stream, but specifically in residential properties, four units or less, it required 5% reuse. So, you know, trying to introduce those materials back into the economy. And so that's one of the triggers of bringing materials from the waste stream, because we're introducing new markets to demolition contractors as well. That, you know, so far they've really been focusing on recycling, specifically of metals, concrete, and brick. But lumber has a tremendous value, and that's one of the things that we're, you know, so part of what we're doing here is educating contractors of different opportunities as well.
You know, it's funny, just this past week, I watched the building
across the street from where I live in Logan Square mm-hmm. get taken down by a backhoe. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was any attention paid to any of the lumber, and that was an older home. That home had been there a while. I can't tell you exactly how old. Part of the problem was they just showed up one day and started tearing it down, and I think that's the way those things happen. And then, you know, I'm a neighbor. I pay taxes. I live across the street. It's going to affect me because it's what I look out when I walk out my front door, mm-hmm. and yet I didn't know it was happening. Is this kind of an issue you have to deal with, too, that sometimes you know there's good material in a place, but it disappears before you can get to it?
Absolutely. It's really, it makes me sad to hear that because there's so much potential in all of the buildings that are torn down. And, you know, Chicago is a city that's really having a revitalization. The economy is booming again. It's really starting to turn the corner. So we're seeing all of these buildings being torn down in my neighborhood, too. I see that a lot of times, and it's hard. So one of our goals is to reach out specifically to the demolition crews and build partnerships. We have a partnership with Blue Earth Deconstruction. And so we work with them to get homes that they're deconstructing delivered here. We have a photo of the home of where your lumber is coming from. It's a great opportunity, and we're trying to do that more and reaching out with the demolition contractors as well.
We should explain the difference then between deconstruction and demolition.
Sure. So deconstruction is the systematic takedown of a building. It's really the disassembly of a building, and you're taking it down in a very responsible manner so that you can salvage and harvest those materials specifically for reuse or repurposing in some way, shape, or form. Demolition is taking a backhoe or a wrecking ball or what have you and smashing the building to the ground, raising it to the ground and sending it to a landfill. And, you know, one thing I do want to I want to piggyback on Kelly saying, like, we really want to work with more demolition contractors in that they are taking, there's far more demolition contractors than there are deconstruction contractors. They're generating a tremendous amount of materials. I try not to use the term waste.
Well, words are important. Mm-hmm. The same battle was happening with food scraps. Mm-hmm. And notice I say food scraps, not food waste.
Exactly.
Because the minute you tag something with the word waste, that's how people...
Value.
Yeah, right, and people think of it that way.
Yeah. If you refer to something as waste, people think of it as trash, as garbage. There's no value to it. These building materials, and going back to my time at Cook County, part of the importance of the 3D ordinance is that we recognize that building materials, of the materials going into the waste stream, building materials have one of the highest values and one of the materials that are most easily reused as well. So we're potentially making a big impact on the waste streams here. And so, you know, we really want to work with demolition contractors in addition to deconstruction contractors to try and divert materials from the waste stream, because I think there's a tremendous value, and a lot of the demolition contractors are set in their old ways. But if you really look at the industry, the most successful contractors are the ones that are disassembling materials, or they're segregating materials on site, and they're finding additional uses for materials. So what we really want to get them to do is follow the three R's. You want to reduce, you want to reuse, and then if you can't do that, then you start to recycle.
Some people would add some other R's. Refuse, which is refuse to buy new stuff that's junk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Rethink is another one. Rethink the way that we do everything. We have to have that whole cradle-to-cradle
exactly
philosophy.
Right.
That was Bryant Williams, who's the senior director at the Rebuilding Exchange in Chicago. Kelly Farley is the executive director here. And Kelly, I want to ask you a question about this. Do you consider this operation a Chicago operation or a regional operation?
I think the goal is to make it a regional operation. While we exist in Chicago and have existed in this is our third location in Chicago, our goal is to create a market and really demonstrate the success of this social enterprise. We recently, in March, became completely independent from our founding organization, Delta Institute, another Chicago nonprofit. And our goal is to show that this can work. And this nonprofit model does create jobs. It creates opportunities to train people with barriers to employment. And we have talked to people in Michigan and Indiana in particular about starting something there in their communities as well.
Is this unique? Are things like this being done elsewhere in the country?
They are being done throughout the country. There's all sorts of different models. There's nonprofit ones, there's for-profit ones, and there's all sorts.
You're nonprofit.
We are a nonprofit, and there's all sorts of methods in between. Some folks do the deconstruction themselves. Some of them just receive donated materials. So we're kind of piloting different models, seeing what works, what doesn't. It's really what we found works for us is taking the donated materials for resale, demonstrating value by processing them into the furniture like the table we're sitting at right now. We also do workshops to educate the public on how to use the products here. So if you don't know how to hang a reused door, take a workshop here. We've served, I think, about 4,000 individuals from the Chicago area in different workshops we've provided. And then we have our job training program, which we've done through various partners, particularly with the CARA program. We've trained 82 people with barriers to employment, four of whom are on our full-time staff, and one of them is on our management team.
We are at the Rebuilding Exchange in Chicago with Kelly Farley and Bryant Williams. I'm going to continue this conversation right after this.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakening Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
We're gonna empty out our old place and move into a brand new better space.
Now back to the Rebuilding Exchange and my conversation with Kelly Farley and Bryant Williams. By the way, their website is rebuildingexchange.com. .org.
And the pans and all the breakable glass, the living room couch and the dining room table, the washer and the dryer, what a pain in the ass. We got the TV and the home entertainment center.
Back at the table, and it's a refurbished table at the Rebuilding Exchange. What kind of wood is this, by the way?
I believe this is pine.
You've got the tag there.
It is reclaimed pine.
Yeah. Good guess. Wow. Nicely done. I wouldn't know. but it's in a little showcase area here to show people how and what they can do with repurposed materials, and that's the whole point of the nonprofit Rebuilding Exchange in Chicago. Now, you mentioned earlier that You work with other organizations to bring you materials, but do you send your own people out to recover stuff that might be valuable?
Right, we do have we can pick up donated materials, but we don't actually do the disassembly at this point. So we do have pickup crews. I think.
Would you like to? Is that something you're aspiring to?
I think we would definitely be interested in looking into it, particularly because it would help us create more of a pipeline for our job trainees if we could also then be employing them in doing the deconstruction disassembly work themselves. But currently, we go out throughout the Chicagoland region and pick up donated materials from home renovations or complete teardowns.
But it must lead to some disappointments, too, that if you can't do it yourself, you can't control the quality of the stuff that comes in. So let me ask you, I don't know if you've been ever asked this question before. When you get stuff in, what is the biggest disappointment when you see, you know, whether it's a door or a cabinet or a sink or windows or something like that? What gets damaged the easiest that really could have been avoided by having the right people do the deconstruction?
I'd definitely say structural pieces like trim very easily damaged porcelain. But that's where repurposing and upcycling comes in as well. So we just look at that as an opportunity to try and get creative. You know, I look around where we're sitting here, and there's some damaged trim that we've turned into toolboxes. You know, things of that nature.
Repurpose it as something else.
Exactly,
get creative that way.
Yeah. So that is part of the idea behind RX Made, wood processing, or the part of our business that actually creates the materials to demonstrate the values and the value in these reclaimed materials. I'm looking across the board. We have beer floats for different restaurants. Even one of the more popular sellers that we have are the bottle openers made from reclaimed building materials, made from reclaimed lumber. And so those are oftentimes from...
Wait, bottle openers?
Bottle openers, yes, sir.
From lumber?
From reclaimed lumber.
How does that work?
Very, very well.
I've opened many beers with them.
Exactly right. I have a group
of
friends that are big craft beer drinkers. And
now she's off trying to hunt one down there.
Made from reclaimed lumber and steel created right here in the Midwest as well. So, being from the southeast side of the city, I have a huge respect for the steel industry that we've lessened in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. But I do appreciate what's been done, and we're trying to all of the materials that we use are generated here in the Chicago area. Processed right here in the Chicago area as well. So we really want to create very strong local jobs and really strengthen this economy in the area. So.
I read something on your website, some ridiculous numbers about what you've diverted from landfills. You want to help me with that?
Sure. We've now diverted about 9,300 tons of building materials.
And ending up in various homes and various jobs and... places.
Yeah, it's in individuals' homes. We've done installations in commercial office space, and one of the most fun areas, I think, is all of the bars and restaurants that we are featured in Chicago.
Yeah, Bryant was telling me about that. That seems to be one of your specialties.
Yeah, I think it definitely is one of our specialties. A couple of different bars and restaurants spring immediately to mind. Sweet Station over in Lincoln Park, Maria's Packaged Goods over in Bridgeport, installations that we've done the complete build out for those two facilities. But there's also a couple others, and even some office spaces. I think we did a State Farm office space in the Lincoln Park area. So those are pretty exciting. I mean, I think of course there's the opportunity to do very simple, very small projects like tables, for residential properties, tables and bars. But to really do an entire build out is just showing the possibilities of what can be done with reclaimed building materials.
From what I understand, anybody can bring in materials, right?
Absolutely. We accept donations of any types of materials. I think depending on, the space in our warehouse, we like to get a heads up first so we can tell people if there's anything we can't take. But for the most part, we try to work with anybody. There's a form on our website they can submit to tell us what they have, and we can send a pickups crew to come out and get it.
Oh, so you'll do pickup as well?
Absolutely.
Anything in particular that you really like to get your hands on?
I think we love to see any sort of architectural fixtures, anything that's kind of a connection to the past. I think one of the compelling parts about what we do here is the story behind the materials. So we have gymnasium flooring from some various Chicago public schools, or we have train decking from old rail cars. And the more you know the story behind the materials, the more you have a connection to those materials in your home.
Yeah, I was surprised. I shouldn't be surprised, but I saw some beds not too long ago made with old lumber, and lumber's all scarred and scratched, but that's part of its charm. You know,
exactly.
It came from a barn or it came from someplace else, and it was actually used and weathered, and, refurbish it, but it's still got those marks in it.
Exactly, and if you look at some of the big box stores like Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, et cetera, they're actually starting to market lumber or wood that press board that looks like it's aged lumber, which is absolutely
wood.
Hilarious to me. But when you can come here and get the same, get the real thing at a much higher quality and a much better price. So, not that I'm throwing shade or anything like that.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Now you got your bash coming up. On Friday, August 28th, the Madison and Wabash Bash, but it's not at Madison and Wabash, right?
It's right here at the Rebuilding Exchange, 1740 West Webster, corner of Elston and Webster.
Okay, what are you guys going to do here?
We're going to have a big party. So we've worked with Preservation Chicago and with some other partners with the CTA and CDOT to feature the materials from the Madison and Wabash CTA station. It was the last original station house left standing that was recently taken down while they're renovating down in the loop. So we have the facades. We've got benches, lumber. Tin ceiling pieces, all sorts of materials that were...
Are they yours now? Did you get them?
So we got some of the materials. A couple other nonprofits got some of the materials as well. We're featuring the facade in the hopes that a museum will see it and want to feature it. So that's kind of just going to be in the Rebuilding Exchange for public viewing until there's somebody that wants to take that and keep it safe. The rest of the materials that we got were donated to us, and we're going to be doing a silent auction at the event to let people take home a piece of this history. It's the station was built in 1896, and there's some really beautiful pieces that need a good home.
Wow. All of us who live in Chicago at one point or another stood up there on the L and under the roof there and wondered why the station was so old and why they didn't fix it.
Right. Yeah, my wife and I, before we were even married, when we was still dating and living in the west, in the South Loop, that was our station that we would take the train home together, you know. So it has a special place in my heart as well. So I'm really looking forward to the Madison and Wabash Bash. So
okay, so you're going to be auctioning off these items, and is what else is happening that evening?
Well, we have some great partners and supporters. We've got a couple of food trucks that are going to be featuring empanadas and some euros. We also have some desserts donated by Whole Foods, and Goose Island is donating their Green Line beer for donations to the Rebuilding Exchange, as well as a homebrew club called Chaos that's going to be sampling some of their beers for free as well.
I think I'm going to have to be here. Okay, so. Mark the 28th. And what does it cost to get in?
It's free to come.
Oh, and the idea being that the bid on something when you get here, right?
Bid on something while you're here. Maybe maybe take home an item from the RX Made collection. You know, maybe obtain a bottle opener.
The wooden bottle opener you told me about that I still haven't seen, and I still don't quite understand how it works. We're gonna see one of those before I go.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd like to reinforce the Rebuilding Exchange as a nonprofit. So while we are about 90% funded through the sales from our warehouse and RX Made line, individual donations are so helpful in allowing us to take these materials and process them to create jobs for the people with barriers to employment and folks in our community, and to provide training for those people as well.
Yeah, that's really good question, actually. Where do you get the people who come here and work, and what kind of skills do they learn?
We are working with the CARA program right now, and we've received some funding from the Act of Hope Foundation to help supplement the cost for training. So we train them in customer service, in wood craftsmanship, in warehouse skills, and
forklift training, OSHA certifications. I think there's a couple other those are the larger aspects of our training, but also trying to place them in positions, into full-time positions, permanent positions once we're finished here. So, we do greatly appreciate the support of our partners and our supporters in working on that endeavor.
All right, now I want to see that bottle opener.
Got right? One in my office, if nothing else. So.
It's not helping me right here, okay?
I bet there's one over there.
Uh-oh, here we go. Here we are. All right. Oh, okay. I was trying to figure out. Okay, this is cool.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. I was trying to figure out how this was going to open, how wood was going to open a bottle of beer. But you add the little metal piece on it, and the wood part of it is the handle and the sort of the heft, and it really does. You could
exactly right.
You could do some damage with this.
Extremely sturdy. I've given literally probably 10 or 15 of them out as gifts to some of my friends, and you know, never had a complaint and never had one crack or break.
I want one of these. They're just too cool. So what does one of these things run?
$25, I think.
Yeah.
You know, but it's the last bottle opener you'll ever need. So.
I think what's really neat to me as well is that it's made here, and the materials from it are all sourced locally. I recall being told even the screws are somewhere, mm-hmm. are manufactured somewhere within 200 miles of Chicago. So there's one screw in the back on there.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to us that we can show that, you know, the Midwest is a great place to create.
Do you fabricate this here too?
The lumber is fabricated here, is processed here, but the metal portion is done with one of our partners, I believe, Westtown, Greater Westtown. Yeah.
So you slide it on and you put the little screw in and you're done. It's and you got the little logo there.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
It's the brand, which is branded into the wood.
Yeah, it's the RX Made brand, which looks like a little screw, aerial view of a screw top.
I like it. Great stuff. Kelly Farley, Executive Director of the Rebuilding Exchange. Bryant Williams, Senior Director. Thank you guys so much for this audio tour. And just want to remind folks that on August 28th, stop by the Rebuilding Exchange. I'll make sure that this part of the conversation is on my local show, because the show is elsewhere in the country, but the Chicagoans need to know about this and stop by. I think I'm going to stop by myself.
I hope so. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think it will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, I think it tie in really nicely with some of your other endeavors with the Chicago Recycling Coalition as well.
So, this is one of the things you learn, and I'm glad you bring that up, because everything's connected. Mm-hmm. It's all connected, and like I said, I mean, it connects to food, it connects to soil, it connects to growing, it connects to building, it connects to keeping stuff out of landfills and keeping the carbon dioxide and the methane out, and that's part of what you guys are doing is making sure we have a planet in 20 years.
I think that's so true. And, you know, for years now, we've heard about the triple bottom line or the three-legged stool of economy, people, and environment. But the way I think our founding organization, Delta, and Rebuilding Exchange as well see it is it's nested circles, because the environment, the people, and the economy can't live without each other. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that they're not three separate parts, but to view them all as nestled together.
We can make an argument. I mean, I might argue that it's Venn diagrams, okay, and it circles that way. That was a joke. I'm sorry. Okay. never mind. All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I greatly appreciate it, man.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Gardeners are smart. Now, why do I say that? Well, gardeners know that if they live, say, in Chicago, in USDA hardiness zone 5B or 6A, they can grow plants that are suited to zones 5B or 6A. If they live in Denver, Colorado, where the zones are basically 5B and 6A, they're going to have some of the same success. That's why a publication like Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is useful in a lot of places in this country. It covers zones from about 4A to 6B, and that's a lot of area. It also has my column on the inside back page of every issue, and even that is transferable from state to state without a license. And speaking of state by state, that's the name of the outfit that publishes Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. They have 21 different publications in the Midwest and the South. Subscribe today by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
A couple of years ago, I'm not even sure how this came onto my radar, but I found out about something called the Marshall Strawberry and a woman named Leah Gauthier. And what ended up happening is she came to the studio where I was doing my radio show at Progresso Radio. And she dropped off a bunch of strawberries for my crew and me to, to put in our own gardens and grow what has been considered one of the greatest strawberries ever. James Beard, no less than James Beard, thought it was at the top of the heap. And we're not talking about the compost heap. We're talking about the culinary heap. And I'm very pleased to have Leah back. And Leah, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Well, I have to do a little follow-up on this because I have been receiving emails from you for a couple of years now since...
Yeah.
You did, and you were based before in Indianapolis, right? Or Indiana?
Bloomington, Indiana.
Okay. And so you were able to schlep up to Chicago with a load of Marshall strawberries and drop them off. And I planted mine in my yard. My buddy Ron Cowgill, who hosts Mighty House, which you can find on the GDGD radio network and some of the other places where... my show appears, planted it in his, and I know he's been getting strawberries from it, and he's a construction guy, all right? It survived at least a couple of places here, and I'll get into that in just a little bit, but I think we need to go back and explain to folks what the Marshall strawberry is and why somebody like you has gotten involved, because is it University of Oregon?
Yeah, so I'm an artist, and at the time I found out about Marshall, I was working with food. I still do work with food as a medium, and I was working with rare plants. And so I, just finished up my thesis piece on heirloom lettuce, and I was looking for...
You got to stop right there. You did a thesis piece on heirloom lettuce?
I did. Yeah, I sure did. Yeah. It was one of these omnivore dilemma inspired. I have to find out about industrial agriculture by growing these amazing lettuces myself, and seeing how they taste and how they differed from something you could buy in the grocery store. And then I proceeded to make a sculptural installation where people could come into the gallery, snip off lettuce, and eat it. Because I felt like the best way to tell people about heirloom vegetables is to get them to taste it.
Leah, didn't your mother ever tell you not to play with your food?
It's the best thing ever. You get to cook and make art all at the same time.
All right. Now you got me off on a tangent here. I have to ask you, how many other food artists are there in the world?
We're a small group, but growing because...
But, where's my rim shot?
Growing because the great thing is people are really getting the message about... growing your own food and these wonderful heirlooms that we're still probably losing to big ag, but, the backyard gardener is really a big champion of some of these really wonderful varieties that, would otherwise not be available. So mm-hmm. It's a really cool story.
It is a very cool story. You were working with heirloom lettuce and you stumble onto the Marshall strawberry. How did that come to your attention?
Yeah, so I was just doing some research online and I went to Slow Foods Arc of Taste, and Marshall strawberry was actually on, at that time, I think it was like 2007, was on the 10 most endangered food list. And they were down to what I found out. I tracked them down. I found out they were down to three plants housed at the USDA Germplasm Repository in Corvallis, Oregon.
That seems outrageous for
a plant that is so highly regarded down to three plants?
Yes. I mean, I was so astounded when I found that out. And it was founded on a roadside. It's a hybrid in Boston, just outside of Boston. It was grown widely in the East Coast. There is a huge gap in knowledge about how it traveled to the West Coast, but then eventually became the darling of the West Coast strawberry industry. And it was served to royalty. It was just, but then, you know, it succumbed to a virus. And also it's like, you know, a berry, it's like vine to table berry. It is not, you know, a strawberry that travels well. So it fell out of favor, and so much so that it was almost wiped off the planet.
You know, that's so interesting because I just did a show with a guy from the University of Florida who's trying to come up with the perfect tomato. He's hybridizing tomatoes for the very same reason, because the tomatoes we have in the store don't taste like anything, like the strawberries we get.
Right, that's right.
But the whole point of the growers is, hey, we don't get paid for taste. We get paid.
Right.
We get paid if people buy them. We get paid if we can grow a lot of them cheaply and efficiently and get them off to the stores, and they look good when they get into the stores. That's all we're paid for, and not taste.
So I was, you know, like most of us were very tired of the styrofoam strawberries, and I thought, well, gosh, if this strawberry was so amazing, I've got to taste it for myself. And I contacted the scientists at Corvallis and asked them if they would send me runners, and they were pretty much always sending them out for scientific research. No one was really at that time thinking about growing them for food. And so I said, yeah, I want to taste them. I want to grow them for food. I want to see what happens. And I'm also returning them. I was then in grad school in Boston, so I would have been returning them to their original roots. And so they were very excited about that. FedExed me, you know, one runner with six baby plants to it. And I really felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders when I received this package. And I planted them, I fussed over them, I watered them, I misted them because they weren't rooted. And the next morning I woke up and three had died, and I was just devastated. But they were no root. So, you know, it's very challenging to root strawberries off the mother plant. And I didn't really know anything about this when I did it. So the last three plants took root and fruited. And, you know, the berries are complex and herbal and unlike anything that I had imagined, because I was used to either tasteless or super, super sweet. And this was like something very different. And I was so intrigued and fell so in love with the story and the berry itself that I continued growing them.
So you've been growing them and selling them. You know, it's part art, part commerce, part love of the plant, and this variety that people need to experience. How many plants have you grown in the last few years, and how many have you distributed?
Yeah, so I didn't distribute them at first. So I got those three plants going, and I eventually increased my base crop to about 100 plants. And that took a couple of years. And I really didn't know what my end game was. You know, I just knew I felt responsible for the strawberry and loved it and carried it around with me to different residences and pots. And, you know, so, but when your crop starts getting to be about 100 big and you're schlepping it in pots all over the place from move to move, it gets harder.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of your problem, is that you keep moving.
I know.
And you're trying. And what's the challenge between growing the strawberry in Indiana and growing it now in Maine, where you live?
Yeah, so Maine, we have a very short growing season, and you know, it doesn't really get warm until, you know, maybe sometimes July. So it's a June bearing strawberry that does produce late June here, But then, you know, we go very quick. We take a quick dive into fall most of the time, you know, late September. And then we have really harsh winters. So when I was in Bloomington, we had a drought. We had drought conditions. And I realized it just went wild there. And so I realized the plant really likes to have dry feet. Good drainage, dry feet.
Ah.
And so I've tried to... here, because we can have very wet springs in New England.
Yeah.
So I tried here to mimic that as much as possible. Right now I'm keeping them in very well drainage oriented containers, but I'm going to mix beds and I'm going to try like a sand mulch soil mix that I think will be really well draining.
Well, let me explain mine because you got it to me a couple of years ago and I planted it immediately, and I don't have full sun in my yard, but I got a spot that's pretty good, you know, and I put it in there, and the first year it was fine. Now, we had one of the harshest winters ever. The very first winter that I planted it. In fact, we got down to 19 below at one point. That's Fahrenheit. And in the spring, I looked at it and all the leaves were brown and I thought, California dreaming. All the leaves are brown. Yeah, well, that was my Marshall strawberry. But all of a sudden, I saw the green start to come up and I went, yay, it made it. And so I cultivated it that year, but guess what? It didn't do much at all. In fact, it kind of languished and I thought, oh, I'm killing it. I don't have enough sun. I don't know what I'm doing here. It wasn't overly wet because that area is a berm that I created. So it's got good drainage. I just didn't, you know, so I added some compost and I, you know, babied it and made sure I mulched it over the next winter. And then this spring, it came back and it just went nuts.
Yay!
Yes, and producing berries. I think I sent you a photo of the plant. You can see it. We had a little cage because we didn't want the squirrels to get to it. And it produced rather nicely, and now it's sending runners all over the place.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so
it needed a year to settle in or something.
Yeah, maybe it did. You know, sometimes the plants take a couple of years to get their mojo. So I've actually taken some of the runners and, you know, as they tell you in some places, use a clothespin so that the runner is close to the ground so the roots can go down. And I've done that in a couple of pots, and it's all, and not only have they taken, but those plants are sending out runners. So it's like a runner chain that's going out.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And so I hope to give them to some friends, including, now here's what I'm trying to do in Chicago, because I'm friends with a guy named Bill Shores, who is the gardener for Rick Bayless. Who's a very fancy chef in Chicago. And I'm going to see if we can't get some Marshall strawberries in one of his restaurants.
Oh, that would be so fantastic. And I know Rick Bayless's work. And that would be fantastic. And here in Maine, we have a chef that's also, he came out to taste the strawberries last year. And he's also, he's got an award-winning restaurant here in Portland, and he wants them grown out for his restaurant. So trying to grow the crop larger so I can get a larger berry, you know, yield, and then also have enough plants to provide everyone who wants them as well. So, and then we had Ed Bear and his wife, Kim, who they run The Art of Eating. They write The Art of Eating. And they came out from Vermont, drove 3 hours to taste the plant and taste the strawberry, and they thought it was fantastic. And so it's really like a lot of the chefs in the foodie community now are really interested in tasting and reviving this berry in their restaurants. So it's exciting.
Yeah, it is. So it means, I guess, you're still managing to grow crops there and still distribute them. Is there an end game yet?
Well, my dream, this is my dream, is to Well, two things. One is that I'm gearing up to send out about 350 plants across the country this season. And so what I hope happens is successes, more successes like yours around the country, so that when Chicago folks want Marshall strawberries, they can go locally for them. Then I wouldn't be like the main distributor anymore. I'm hoping that we can set up hub growers so people want them in Mississippi, there's a place to go if people want them. So that's really about the whole revival plan.
What I advise people to do to find out more about this is go to marshallstrawberry.com. Now, are you still taking orders? I mean, if people write to you, are you still able to send them out for a small fee, or is that not possible?
Yeah, so I've had a waiting list for about a year. Folks have been incredibly patient. And my strawberry plants this year are also prolifically reproducing. So I will be able to, I predict, unless something, you know, crazy happens, will be able to actually fulfill all of the wait lists. And I think I'm going to have extra plants this year. So if folks are interested in having some this season, I believe I'm going to have enough to have extras.
So the story is that despite your move, despite all the things, the obstacles that get thrown in your way, you're continuing to propagate the Marshall strawberry, and who knows, it might end up in fancy restaurants and on dinner tables all over the country.
I would absolutely love that. I feel like it would be, a small win, but a win nonetheless, that folks will have something that was so treasured that they can have that again in their backyards, their homes, their tables, in their restaurants, and enjoy them, and more people can have them in their backyards. I mean, it just feels like, you know, we almost lost something, and we're bringing it back in a very slow but steady way, and I have so many people across the country to thank, including you, for jumping on the bandwagon and helping out. And it really, it says a lot about, you know, the gardening movement here in the U.S. and folks that are, you know, our backyard gardeners are very empowered to make a big difference. You know, all of us together can make a big difference.
So, Leah, thank you so much for talking to me again. It's great to have you back on the show. And I'm going to post my photos of the Marshall strawberries I grew this year, and I hope folks take advantage of it and try to grow it themselves.
Oh, fantastic. And we have a brand new website up, and I hope over the next several years that we can tell more of the stories of all of you who are growing them in your backyard. So that's another thing to look forward to down the line.
All right. I don't know how interesting my story is because I almost killed it, but it survived, and we actually had some wonderful strawberries this year. Leah, we'll talk again very, very soon.
Thank you so much, Mike.
And I have just five words for you. Go green or go home. You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.